Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hello, FinTech leaders. Welcome to the show today. And super excited and super stoked to have a fellow South African on the show today out in Cape Town. Sean, welcome today. Sean has a pretty interesting and cool background. And obviously, that's why we invited him onto the show. He's the CEO and founder of Revex. But prior to that, he's had an interesting journey into getting up and getting Revex started. He was a model at a point in time. Yeah, I listened and I found that out. So he's also a very good rugby player. So that's a very cool trait to have. Obviously, being a sportsman myself, well done there. And other than that, he's worked in VCs, worked in trading, and he's also co-founded and started a number of different businesses. So super stoked to have you on the show today to dive into some of your stories, mate.
Thanks, Richard, and thanks for having me. I mean, I think I need to correct just one thing that you said there as well, yeah. Which is I was a rugby player and I was a so I can say that I had the same sort of pad and physique that I had back then, but I mean, I'm trying.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, there we go. So let's dive into it. And I wanted to start with today is I want to talk about expansion and I want to talk about different parts of expansion. And let's kick it off with getting the, sort of the inside track as to what your expansion formula is. What was your go-to expansion formula as you started Revex? And before I sort of hand the mic over to you, I wanted to say this to the listeners. Expansion is sometimes a bit of a dirty word. People don't always like talking about it because we have to change, we have to alter, we have to maybe shift our mindset as we move forward. And you got to know this, the world changes every second, every minute, every day, every week. And there's two options here on the table of a business owner, an entrepreneur, founder. One is expansion and the other is contraction. So, you know, I'd love for you to go through your expansion formula with us today so we can sort of unpick it and start understanding exactly how you looked at starting and expanding Revex.
Great. So for us, it was pretty simple, really. And I'm saying that not to be arrogant or anything, but it was pretty simple because for us, it's like you want to launch a product and you need to get people who are interested in that product that then choose to put money behind it. So, you know, how many people are you getting to buy into this and, you know, how much money are they investing? Yeah. So for us to kind of test out how we roll out a different variety of different products, it really is just a case of us having conversations with people. That was the start of our expansion strategy. So to say, listen, are you actually interested in this? Would you put some money in it? We actually, when we started with Revex, we sort of put together an MVP, and I'm talking now a good 3.5 years ago odd. We put together an MVP where it was literally just, it was a questionnaire. That was the MVP. I mean, people talk about MVPs being fully workable products and all the rest, but the MVP really can be like, would you like to invest? Because we have cryptocurrency bundles, very similar to ETFs, but would you like to invest in a diversified cryptocurrency bundle with no cost? Like, would that be something that you're interested in? Yeah, great. Okay, fantastic. Now we've got somebody potentially interested. Then it's okay. Would you actually put your money into this? Fantastic. Let's actually manage this ourselves. Let's, you know, put together the basic vehicle that somebody could invest in, which we did. And people were able to put money into that. And then you can start polishing the edges. And instead of saying, well, okay, so now what fee can we charge you? So how can we actually make money from this? And that's sort of like a second degree sort of approach then is to say, okay, right, let's start polishing around that. Now we've like sort of got a little bit of validation for the product and let's take it from there. But then the expansion side of things, which is to say, listen, how do you actually offer this to loads of people, especially with a fintech? That becomes a whole sort of another sort of story because now you've got to take something that you're able to offer to a handful of people and offer it to thousands. And that's not easy. So that's really complicated. Going from that, you know, handful of customers to that 1,000 mark, that requires, you know, the dev work, a slightly more scalable sort of product, but it still requires testing. I mean, you never stop testing as a fintech, whether it's testing the way that you are communicating with customers, whether you're trying to get feedback from them with regard to, I don't know, the user experience, the sort of fee structures that are in place and all the rest. It's absolutely critical to get that information when it comes to expansion. And then the testing component then feeds into a bigger test until ultimately that's the product that's making you money. So that sort of beachhead approach of saying like, listen, let's pick a few areas, let's make sure that we can actually execute in these areas and get feedback is the way that we go about expanding.
Okay, so what you're saying here is there's, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm going to say the quick and the dirty. Let's get something out there. This is the start. Guys, this is the start, not the end. Let's get something out there. An Excel spreadsheet, a questionnaire, whatever it is, let's test the market and let's see what our consumers are saying. So I've got a question for you on that. As you're testing the market, you see what your consumers are saying, how does that information that's going back to you, how do you take it in to your product? Yeah, one question. The second is, how do you also take that information in and look at the purpose of your company and where it's going?
Sure. So I set out with some hypotheses to say, listen, people want to get diversified exposure to crypto. Yeah. People aren't too sensitive to fees because of this is because crypto is so volatile that sort of the upside potential sort of negates any fee effects.
Yeah.
And those are the assumptions that I'm waiting for feedback on in particular, yeah, right? The validation I don't really want to get. I want to get that negative feedback. And then we can lean into that and say, okay, wow, like did not expect somebody to say that they aren't willing to pay, let's say 50 basis points or 0.5% to trade. And that's the sort of stuff that then allows us to go, okay, well, maybe our assumption here is wrong. Let's get more feedback in this area. So that's really critical for us. The second question that you brought up, I seem to have short-term memory loss. What did you say there, Richard?
The purpose. So obviously we build in the product and the mechanism that our users are going to engage with. The second part is the information that's coming through, even at an early stage. How does this play into defining and evolving, maybe the word is evolving, the purpose of the company?
Yeah, so I personally believe that you as the founder sort of set that purpose to begin with. User feedback, then you know, you sort of build that business to be able to solve the problem and you improve that user experience. But you're the one that sort of sets that outcome or that goal and you work towards that. It's not the customer setting that necessarily. So as an example with Revex, we've started in a very interesting area. We offer cryptocurrency investment products as our first asset class.
Yeah.
Now, our vision and our mission with the business really is to broaden our horizon, go well beyond just crypto, focus on alternative investments, more traditional investments, and enable everyday people to become their own wealth managers. Mm-hmm. So to give people their power to sort of manage their own finances, to become DIY investors. And when you're starting a business, it's like there's nothing that you can offer a customer really that's going to sort of fulfill that mission, like not at the beginning at least. Mm. So that was sort of the peg that we set in the sand, and now we're working towards that. So it's like, how can we refine that bit by bit, like laying little bricks as we go along?
Okay. So the customer feedback, so your purpose is set out before you even send your MVP to Mark, before you test it. And that's the thing that drives your questionnaire, the thing that drives your testing, the thing that obviously drives your purpose, right? So you don't have to, this doesn't change, or does it sort of evolve as you get a bit of better understanding as to what the market needs and what the market wants?
I don't think it necessarily has changed since we've launched Revex.
But not changed. Does it evolve?
It does, yes.
Yeah.
I do feel like it evolves as the business evolves. In a way, it actually feels more authentic now. When I talk about this and I can see, okay, right, we're like 3-4 months away from launching this next asset class that we have. Yeah. Like that's all of a sudden like, oh my gosh, are we going beyond just crypto? I mean, crypto feels very speculative. It's hard to sort of tell a newbie that's joining the business, hey, listen, you know, we are going to change people's lives by making investing accessible and stuff. And they're like, but you just have crypto bundles and you're not sort of seeing the bigger vision as then a sort of newbie joiner and all the rest.
I like it. Okay. So we've got MVP, we're testing that. We're going out with a purpose, but we're also cognizant and adaptable to evolving our purpose as our journey expands and we go into different phases of our company. So then the expansion comes, and you mentioned that, okay, it's tricky. Okay, it's tricky to go from 10 to 1,000, 1,000 to 2,000. So I guess my question there is one of this. Okay, so if we break it down to the bare bones, expansion in this instance is getting more users onto the platform. Yeah.
That's exactly what it is at this stage. We're optimizing for new active customers. And that's maybe an interesting point that I can, you know, just bring up now, which is each stage of our business, we're optimizing for something slightly different. At the early stages, we were literally just optimizing for product validation. We were saying, how do we just prove that we've got some sort of product market fit? Then we got product market fit and we got into this position of being like, help, we've got to raise a lot of money. I mean, building mobile apps, building the complicated trade algorithms and all the rest, it's expensive. So how do we raise money? Well, we need new active users. So fantastic. How do we optimize for new active users? Not really caring about profitability, obviously keeping it in mind, but not necessarily trying to increase profitability at the quickest rate possible. And we're still in the phase of saying, listen, we need to increase active customers. We'll have a month of profitability, fingers crossed this month, but I will turn up marketing next month and all of a sudden we will be unprofitable again. That's just like the nature of fintech.
Yeah.
But that's now where I think things will change. Now post Series A, we'll then get to the position of saying, hey, listen, we've actually got to improve our EBITDA. And I think that's when we start optimizing for profitability.
Yeah, I like it. I like what you're saying. And just to go back to maybe the beginning or middle of that, where you mentioned marketing, turn up marketing, and obviously the profitability goes down, but your user base, well, hopefully if we're running a good marketing campaign, can spike up at a point in time, maybe not straight away, maybe a couple of weeks after or 6 weeks after the campaign. Outside of marketing, or actually inside marketing, is communication. So how are you then communicating to your audience, your prospects and your customers as to get them on the platform, to get buy-in from them and to allow them to know who you are? So your users go from 1,000 to 2,000, et cetera. What is the communication? I guess what I'm asking is, what is the communication mechanism that you guys are using, or communication mechanisms you guys are using to get more users?
So for us, because we're in this weird space of crypto, and it's still weird, people like blockchain, what is that? Bitcoin, what is this? Everything's educational. That's the base sort of foundation for absolutely everything we do. So can we teach you a little bit more about blockchain, what that potentially means for the future of finance, whatever it may be? Let's talk about Bitcoin. Let's talk about Ethereum. Let's talk about the differences between those two. Let's talk about Cardano, all the different cryptocurrencies. Let's start talking about the themes that we're going to be launching in the future. So automated or AI, automated vehicles. Like, you go through all these weird and wonderful things that are coming out, and they're all hot topics that you can talk about. But people want to learn about these topics in these areas, and then you can have a very sort of organic approach to saying, like, listen, we've told you something about this area and now you want to get exposure to it. Like, here's the platform that allows you to do that. So it's been very organic in that sense. We have paid articles as sort of our main marketing channel, which is to say, listen, let's put out an educational piece with a very organic sort of spin into, come over to Revix if you're interested in investing in this. Another thing which we've done really well is we've launched promotions across the board. So when we have a new product that's launched, we'll remove fees or we'll double up we've gone as crazy as saying, listen, we'll literally double the deposit early on in our life cycle. And that obviously worked really well. People are getting double the money, 100% return before they've done anything. And it worked. It was like sort of growth hacking. And it's not something you can do across every business. We were fortunate to receive a fair amount of early funding, but that allowed us to grow fairly quickly. So there's so many different sort of areas and niches that we can go into on this, but those are sort of like the two main pillars.
Okay, cool. And as you move forward as you expand and you continue growing your business, what role do you see confidence playing as you expand, as you scale? And when I say confidence, I mean confidence in your team. There's actually three: confidence in your team, confidence in yourself as a leader, and confidence in your product. So your users obviously coming in. I mean, how do you look at that? Do you think about it? Is it a part of your scaling philosophy?
Yeah, very much so. We've actually got something on the go at the moment called Project Harvard. And Project Harvard is all about a long story. I'm not going to get into that now, but I worked with two guys before starting at Revix. Both went to Harvard, and I knew them before Harvard. I knew them after Harvard, and their mindsets completely changed and had such a big impact on me just seeing how much they changed, because all of a sudden this mindset was, now I've actually got the capability to do this. Nothing fundamentally changed. Didn't really learn that much. It was more just a case of, I've got a network now. I've been to this prestigious university and I'm great now. So we're trying to implement that across the company, because hell, whenever you're doing something new, you sort of feel like an amateur. Like if we're expanding in the DACH region, which is what we're doing now, the German-speaking countries, I've never done that. I'm like an amateur at expanding into the DACH region. Yeah. So I acknowledge that and I feel imposter syndrome, you know, with the business growing. I don't think there's a founder out there that doesn't feel that. You know, we are constantly saying to the team, guys, you're building one of the fastest growing fintechs in Africa. Like, let that sink in. And yeah. you'll have a designer that still feels like, I don't know, he's sitting 5 or 10 years ago in that junior chair. And he's like, well, I'm still kind of like new to design sort of thing. I mean, these are seniors, right?
Yeah.
So it's constantly sort of supporting them from the top. And when you're feeling imposter syndrome or you're feeling insecure and whatnot, having your team support you. And it really is just about being, again, this is probably the millennial overused term, but being very authentic and candid about the way you feel on both sides so that somebody can be like, listen, no, you rock. So that's internally. I think that hopefully covers that. And yeah. then externally at customers, it kind of comes organically, I think. So we are a very bold brand. We come across as a bit witty and hopefully have a bit of personality. And customers love that. They really do yeah. get really passionate about the brand. And we get a lot of reviews. So we're actually the highest rated investment platform across Trustpilot and Google in Africa. And it's one of the big selling points that we have. It's another key sort of pillar in our communication strategy. And when customers leave us reviews there, I mean, gosh, like that's the confidence and validation that I think then feeds through to other customers. So that's been a really good strategy. I mean, I would definitely recommend that anybody that's listening to that this that is looking to sort of scale a fintech from its early stages to, you know, Series A on, it's to get those reviews and those ratings. That's just such a good long-term sort of marketing tactic that's worked for us.
Yeah, because let's stay on that for a second. Often in the world I live in, there's a feeling that sometimes you can't go out and ask people for reviews, referrals, etc. until the job's actually already done. And actually, I believe that's partially correct. Yeah, you have to have a good platform or do a good consulting gig or whatever it is for you to get a recommendation. But you don't have to wait a year to ask the question. Go out and ask the question very early on in the engagement, where you build in that relationship, where you build in that affinity that with that particular customer or client. I mean, in your case, it's slightly different, but I think it's important that these referrals or reviews are on platforms such as you just mentioned, or they get up onto your website. So when people are wanting to buy from you, a service, a product, or whatever it is, they can easily go take a look, and actually your customers are telling them the actual story rather than them trying to figure it out through various LinkedIn posts and what have you. So I think you raise an excellent point. And listeners out there, think of a way to engage with your customer right now. Take an action to figure out which ones you should be getting referrals from and engage with them. Get video. Video is powerful. Video is one of the most powerful mediums that drives traffic and also drives authentic leadership, as you were just saying. But yeah, moving on. There's also, as you build, and we've spoken a lot about product, getting the users up and running. When you starting out, and actually, I guess when you're moving through the gears, let's put it that way. When you're moving through the gears, is there more emphasis, or did you place more emphasis on sort of the product, building the product, or building the business development department? And when I say business development, meaning sort of the storytelling, the marketing, the promotion, and the sales. How did you guys look at that as you've been scaling up?
You know, I'm one of these guys where I'd love to just say, no, we built the best product and it sold itself, or we built the best marketing department and that yeah. worked. It was just a case of like, let's improve this a little bit, being the product, right. and let's yeah. improve the marketing team a little bit by, I don't know, refining or testing a channel or doing something like that. Yeah. That's the way we've done it. And it's been a little here, a little there the entire time. It's okay. literally not changed since we started this. And I feel like you need to have a good product in order for people to refer your brand or business to their friends and all the rest. And we're actually getting 25% of all of our new signups coming through referrals. And the conversion rate naturally from a referral is far higher than from just, you know, sort of a organic signup that sort of found you somehow. Yeah. And yeah, I think what's powerful as well about sort of building that is that then has this like compounding effect, because the people that are referred then land up referring. So when you get a customer that is one of these power users, it just has such a big impact. But unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, you can't just get away with, I think, focusing on one. You've got to kind of focus on both. And it is just a little win here, a little win there the entire time. And they're both working concurrently the entire time as well.
I like what you say there. You can't just focus on one. And I think sometimes people do fall into the trap of focusing on product, and then their product is maybe left on the shelf for too long when they actually should be selling, but they've neglected sort of their business development function. I mean, just in your experience, maybe not RevX, maybe another experience, has this, because I know you've co-founded a few businesses, have you always had this approach and focus on both sort of the product and the business development angle, or has it changed over time as you've grown up as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, no, hard yards, hard lessons, of course. No, almost every business prior to, I founded a proprietary trading firm called Satya before this. I actually heard that Satya is a beach based in Australia recently, like I think yesterday. Anyway, side story there. But I founded this business called Satya that was non-customer focused. It was a proprietary trading firm. That was the only business that didn't really require any product development, if you can call it that. I mean, what product really would there be? But every other business, I mean, I had this online application system that like we never got any customer feedback. We landed up building everything and then no customer feedback. And what a flop. I mean, that was textbook stuff, like hard lesson to learn, but fantastic lesson to learn. And I always say, like, you know, the reason that you read books, and I read loads of business books, entrepreneurial books, startup books, like all of them said, get feedback from customers. And arrogant dude over here was like, nah, this is definitely like, how could you not use this product? Like, it's ridiculous if you don't use this product. Yeah. And yeah, guess who didn't use the product?
Yeah, the customers. Exactly. There we go. Okay. So yeah, again, listeners, I mean, it's important as you build out your business, even if you're going through various stages, you need to think about not only the product, as Sean's saying, but also the business development activities. You might be releasing a new function in your application. Think about how you're going to promote that, how you're going to market it, how you're going to sell it alongside the development activities that are ongoing. And as you guys are obviously scaling up and building up, I mean, we've talked about confidence. We've talked about how your team is getting more confidence, Project Harvard. How do you look at developing your team as a unit so that you have knowledge and power as a unit rather than knowledge and power as individuals? I ask this because there's a train of thought to go out and go to university or go and do a course somewhere or what have you. But what I've heard and what I've listened to on the FinTech Scaling Show and talking to FinTech leaders is there's a need to grow your team together rather than as individuals. And I'll be interested to see if you have any insights on that.
That is a challenge, without a doubt. I mean, people are in different stages of their career as well. So we've got some senior devs that are kind of, you know, running up to late 50s. They're kind of feeling comfortable and, you know, they don't particularly want to be going out and doing short courses. Then you've got juniors on the other side of things who are kind of chomping at the bit to go out and do the latest programming course or, you know, machine learning course or something like that. And I think it's giving people the autonomy and the power to go and achieve what they want to achieve, because individually, when people feel motivated and challenged and inspired and all the rest, that's when you get the best from them. And I think if you can combine that with effective communication within a business, and that's the effective communication that comes down to having camaraderie and all the rest, building the right kind of culture, you sort of feed off of each other, because ultimately that's how I feel like I've learned the most, certainly, is when I sit in a room, and this is the thing I love the most, is when I sit in a room, as happens often with the design team, the product team, and the dev team, when you sit there and you're like, wow, I'm so dumb. Like, I know nothing. Like, these guys are like so much smarter than me in their respective fields, going through their various expertise and whatnot. And that's how you grow. That's sort of where you're like, oh, wow, like that's something that I didn't know before this. And you've inspired me to think about that in a different way. So it's that communication, camaraderie, and then I think giving the autonomy for people to be able to do things themselves and to drive themselves.
And to create that ecosystem, right? So you say there's communication, camaraderie, autonomy, et cetera. But, you know, as a founder and a CEO, you have to recognize that and you have to give them the space and the ecosystem to flow, to freely flow and give you that or give the team that information.
You do. You definitely do. I mean, something that we push really hard is that, listen, you are responsible. It doesn't matter if you're a junior or a senior, you're responsible for your own time. I mean, with RevX, no one checks what time you arrive at work. No one checks what time you leave. Sometimes people don't even check if you are at work. We have a sort of a remote working environment as well. People come into the office a couple of days a week, but the idea is not that you're in the office. The idea is that you're working effectively. And if you're able to work more effectively from home, hell, let's empower you to do that. And I think that's really what we believe gives people really the sort of the most inspiration and the freedom to achieve things that they want to achieve.
Yeah, I love it. And listen, as we sort of head towards the back end of the show, what I'd like to know is, as a senior leader with your senior team, what questions are you asking and what factors are you considering as you sort of go on that expansion trail and move into new markets?
It's predominantly around culture. It's how can we maintain the culture that we currently have? How do we get people to just love the brand a bit more internally? And it's, I mean, so much easier to say these sort of things than actually doing them. But it's like, how do you get somebody to go like, I work at RevX, you won't believe how amazing this is to their friend. How do you actually get somebody to feel that in the business? And it's not free lunches. It's not just challenging work. It's somehow you pull everything together. And I think that's the most difficult thing. I mean, you go into a new market, and I'm a control freak of note. You go into a new market like Germany, you have to hire somebody on the ground to be able to manage that team. When you're not there, how exactly do they act? And it's the same thing in the South African office, or you know, when we set up in the UK as well, in the UK office. It's kind of like, how do you maintain that? How do you make sure that sort of these companies, and remember, we're autonomous, right? We work with freedom in each region. So it's like, how do you maintain that culture with this freedom? It's a very complicated thing, which I don't think we've solved yet, but we're doing a pretty good job.
Because culture is an interesting topic. It comes down to, I believe it comes down to dealing with people. How do you deal with people? And I think you've got obviously the principles that you outlined, but dealing with people, one thing is making certain that they have the autonomy to do what they want to do, but also they have an understanding that of what they should be doing. So if you're giving someone a hat for the UK, for example, UK country manager, they fully understand and are aligned to firstly their hat and obviously RevX's purpose. And then the autonomy around what they do and how they do it, it should be up to them to execute, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think that is so, so important. But again, it's one of these things that's so easy to say and so difficult to do, because you can say, listen, 100%. These are the outcomes that we're going for. And remember, it's not always just like, okay, great. Well, then you just do X, Y, Z. It's sometimes incredibly complicated because the route that you're going to take to get there is very different. There's the saying that, there's many ways to climb the mountain. And it's true, especially with more complicated sort of problems. So it's something I've actually had to sort of pull myself back from multiple times where I'm like, that's not how you do it. And then I'm like, no, that's not my place to say. And sort of let the person do the thing that they want to do.
I hear you. And you mentioned at the top of the show, you've read a lot of books. It sounds like you did a lot of studying up during the course of your entrepreneurial journey. And, I always like to ask my guests, what books, what scaling books, expansion books, or even podcast YouTube channels do you think our listeners would get benefit from either reading or listening to?
Oh, wow. Where did I start? So for inspiration, I really liked The Start With Why from Simon Sinek. I really enjoyed the How I Built This podcast. So I really enjoy this. I listen to that fairly regularly. There's so many different books. If I look at Anti-Fragile from Nassim Taleb, I feel like that's a fantastic book that most entrepreneurs should read as well. You're going to get a lot of no's and sort of negative feelings throughout a startup's journey. And it's important to sort of be able to confront that. In terms of other podcasts, I mean, because I've got a training background and I've played a lot of sport when I was younger, I wanted to be a professional rugby player. I try to incorporate that as much as possible into my entrepreneurial journey. So Nike's podcast, I forget exactly what the name of the podcast is, but that podcast is just phenomenal in terms of bringing on professionals that talk about mindfulness, meditation, sleep, just everything that an athlete would be focusing on. And I think it's that sort of athlete mindset that you carry over into business. I mean, if you're not an athlete, you're still having that same sort of mindset if you're just sitting in the business world. Hell, if you want to be really good at anything, whether that's a musician or you name it, I mean, you sort of got to adopt those same principles and you've got to be able to sort of step back from situations, analyze them, get feedback, get critical feedback, implement, refine, get better. And it's that entire process that I sort of like try get from those sort of podcasts. I mean, if I had to show you my podcast listen, maybe you can share it in the notes or something. It's pretty extensive. It's a little bit schizophrenic as well. It's in all these different weird areas. And then naturally, because we're deep in the crypto world, I have to entrench myself in that. So you've got the Block podcast, you've got the what is the Bitcoin, 21 Bitcoin podcast as well. So those are the sort of things which now I have to follow because we kind of have to be at the bleeding edge of this industry.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. Let's get them in the show notes. And yeah, I'd love to share that if you're happy with me sharing that on my channel. So listen, mate, been awesome challenge to you. Before we sign off, how can folk get in touch with you and the team at Revix?
Yeah, so it's been great to chat to you too, Richard. And if anyone wants to chat to me, I'm going to be completely honest and say that I've kind of taken a step back from social media more generally, but I am on LinkedIn. And I mean, you'll find me on Instagram, but you'll see a whole bunch of old school modeling photos. So maybe if you want to go and look at that back in the day when I actually, when I had a tan and all the rest. But yeah, Instagram, yeah, you're not going to get hold of me. Facebook, you're not going to get hold of me. On LinkedIn, I'm Sean Andrew Sanders. So you'll see that I'm sure in the show notes. And then for the Revix team, you can head over to www.revix.com. The customer service team is there 24/7. They'll get back to you super quick. Literally, it's 15-minute response times. We try to be anti-bank. So that means we actually provide service. So yeah, feel free to reach out there and you can get in touch with me.
Okay, awesome, mate. Powerful show today, everyone. There's a lot of nuggets in here that I think if you listen to them and take them on, you can really move your business forward. So Sean, again, awesome to have you on the show and looking forward to your expansion and your success.
Thanks, Richard. I appreciate it. And but thank you for actually changing the way people, you know, sort of look at startups, because you do need to ask the hard questions. And it's these sort of things which hopefully can prevent a lot of problems in a whole bunch of other businesses. So thanks for that.
Cool, mate.